The indie farming hit Stardew Valley, where stylish pixel graphics will hook you as you build your perfect farm, is just one of the excellent titles available to play now on Apple Arcade. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
And because Gianni doesn't let me have any fun, my original pitch was like, no, listen.
All right, here we go.
I'm going to turn your audience against you now.
Okay.
My original pitch was like, let's showcase as much variety in each soundtrack as possible. And Gianni said, we only have 30 seconds. Like, damn it.
Sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter, our video game industry interview show. I'm Gianni DiGiovanni. The music makes the game, and something I'm sure longtime friend of the show, Mina Shamali, agrees with
as we dig into the best video game soundtracks released in 2025.
Before we jump into that, here's what's been making the news on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 1st of February.
Switch 2 simulator Tomodachi Life got a Nintendo Direct this week and brings some highly respected self-expression features.
Players are asking why superhero game Dispatch was censored pretty dramatically when it arrived on Switch this week.
And a new Super Mario Galaxy movie trailer shows off fan faves Yoshi and Birdo.
Plus all the games releasing this week that you can look forward to.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website sifter.com.au every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/discord.
There are a couple of reasons why I love doing this episode every year. It's the fourth time we've done it now. It's a great way to appreciate a bunch of different games that were released this year from a slightly different perspective. Every year, for the last four at least, Mina Shamali, host of Game Show on ABC Classic, picks a few games that I normally wouldn't expect. Usually a lot of games. Last year it was 13. This year we've got a definitive top 10 in no particular order. They're all our favorite children this holiday season. Mina Shamali, welcome back for a fourth year. And did I hear something at the very beginning that was a little bit different?
I had the extreme privilege to write you a little theme, a little new Sifter theme. Thank you for asking me to do so. And yeah, it's a hell of a lot of fun. I hope you like it.
I love it. It's so good. We've had this same theme for people who have been a long-time listener for the show since about, well, the first episode in 2015, when we used to be called Pixel Sift back in the day, and we slightly changed it when we changed our name, so it it was slightly different. But effectively, it stayed the same for 10 years. And you know, like anyone, Mina, I think we're not the same people we were 10 years ago, for good
literally,
and for
real. Literally.
Yeah.
Cellular level.
Exactly. So it's exciting to have a new theme for our long-running show, yeah, which in September celebrated 10 years of Sifter and Pixel Sift and all that sort of stuff. So I'm psyched that we're still able to do it. And a really excellent way to debut it here on this on our long-running series now that we've done four of those.
Sheer
10
pleasure.
Years.
Yeah.
All right. So we've gone through and you've picked out 10 different soundtracks for us to listen to. You've got a host of honorable mentions that we'll get to at the end. But just before we go into it, I'm curious, can you, just give me your thoughts? Because in previous years, we've kind of looked back and you play music on Game Show every week on ABC Classic. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, is there something that you can kind of sort of feel like, what is the sound of 2025? Is there anything particular that you've sort of noticed as sort of a defining feature?
It could be that composers are unafraid to write songs and bring lyrics to the foreground. You see it with a few dimensions, the few of these chords you're going to hear today. And not that it wasn't always the case, but I feel like composers have become more fearless around this. And I'm quite enjoying that because it expands what it means to be a video game score.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And I think if you look at the way that music in games sort of is even closer and parallel to music in film and TV, like, you know, composers had songs with lyrics in them all the time, right? And
for sure.
And I actually even think, like, you know, God of War Ragnarok and the other God of War games had quite a bit of, you know, they had lyrics in those songs. That was a big part of that soundtrack, if you remember. But that was kind of an outlier when we included that. Was it last year or the year before? I can't remember.
2022 was God of War.
Yeah, right. So quite a while ago now. So yeah, I think it's interesting because yes, exactly. I noticed that with at least three that you've selected from this time around. But should we jump into the first one? Unless there's anything else you want to sort of set us up with.
Yeah. No. You know what? I think the first one, the first couple, maybe will not be any surprise to anyone who's been paying attention to video games in 2025. I
was a late comer to this game. Everyone told me to play it. Lots of people told me to play it, many parts of it. And I go, yeah, I'll get around to it. Literally, the last couple of weeks while I've been on leave from work, I have been smashing my way through Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
You know how much I envy you?
Yeah.
Because you are getting to play this for the first time and experience it for the first time. I wish I could erase that part of my memory and relive Clair Obscur again and again and again. It's just this soundtrack. You and I have covered this on ABC, but
yeah.
Lorient Testa, his first actual official game project, and he does this. He does that. And here's the thing, what you just heard were two very tiny selections of eight hours of music that cover every. They seemingly somehow have a very consistent sound world, but everything under the sun is covered. I don't think he left anything on the table.
There's some funky jazz bits that kind of come in. And even there's a bit as well. And I'm curious whether or not you listened to this when I, because when we talked to Lorient Testard, you know, he talked about being inspired by, you know, the music of all the, you know, JRPGs and all of these sorts of things. And there's a theme for Mael, which I reckon sounds a lot like, it sounds very, you know, inspired by to Zanarkand from the Final Fantasy X soundtrack. And I don't know
I could hear that.
Yeah, literally because I've just been in it. I'm like, oh, hang on a second. There's kind of like a bit of a similarity there into to sort of how that kind of comes about. So, yeah, it's been really surprising. But, you know, as you said, you've got lots of pieces which are, you know, have these beautiful singing along.
Alice Duport-Percier, yes. What a wonderful collaboration. And, like, I look at this as a dual soundtrack, as a dual composers.
Co-composers,
Yeah, exactly. And I think like Lorient gets a lot of credit because he did do a lot of instrumental stuff as well. But even in some of the bigger stuff where it's just you're just hearing this massive orchestra and like these big drums and everything for these boss battles, you're still hearing Alice kind of seep her way through with her voice. And for anyone who's been interested in video game arrangements of their favorite soundtracks, Alice Duport-Percier was actually part of the Grissini project that did a lot of fantastic arrangements over the last decade or so. And it's fascinating when I found out that it was like, oh my God, it's the same person. I've been listening to these guys for a long time. And it's really, it's not out of nowhere. You know, her voice and her appearance is really a continuum of what she's already been doing for so long.
It's absolutely one of the most interesting soundtracks to listen to and very stirring. I just feel like it's just this sort of like melancholy like weaved throughout it, but also like a standing in the face of adversity, which I really love as well. And so, yeah, there's a good reason why everyone is going on about this game this year. And I actually think in terms of if we talk about the game perspective, because we're sort of not doing a full Game of the Year episode this time round for Sifter, what I really liked about it is that it has all those hallmarks of those turn-based RPGs that you would be familiar with, particularly from the sort of late PlayStation and PlayStation 2 era. But the way that it's so active as well in terms of battles and things, I really loved the fact that you can basically, you know, be so dynamic, and so much of it feels like when you literally hit the marks as you are going, literally, like you hit your marks and then all of a sudden you do this incredible counterattack, and that is just, it's thrilling every time. It's I always feel like, yes.
Yeah. It's very satisfying. And of course, I am surprised that there is not a track in these 8 hours of music, 8+ hours, called Parriot.
Yeah. Yes.
Just Parriot. I don't know how many times Mael has said Parriot in your playthrough.
Yeah.
But
Luna, even Parriot.
And even when he couldn't parry, it's like, oh my God. Oh,
let him down.
Would have been a great musical troll
if
Lorient had put that in.
Yeah, very, very funny. All right. Well, shall we go into the next piece, you know, next game that you've selected? And this is another game that will just be, no one is going to say anything other than this game in every game that you list this year. And for very good reason. It is a game that I am relatively terrible at, but at least I can listen to the soundtrack and enjoy that as I'm going along. It's finally here, Mina. Hollow Knight Silksong, it's out and it's in the world and people have played it and passed it.
And I could not be more excited. I was very excited about the soundtrack finally coming because, yes, we were all waiting for the game. And that score in that first Hollow Knight, Christopher Larkin, absolutely knocked it out of the park. What really excited me about this one was I looked at the credits list and the list of live musicians on Hollow Knight Silksong exponentially larger. You had two live musicians on Hollow Knight, and the rest Christopher Larkin was realizing digitally and making virtual orchestra sound as real as he could, and he did a fantastic job. But now, Hollow Knight Silksong, you have actual members of the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra and the Adelaide Concert Orchestra playing through. You have featured solo vocalists. You have a full choir. Mostly from Adelaide, a couple of people from Melbourne as well. And I sat there, I was like, okay, that's how you raise the stakes. That's how you take Hollow Knight from 10 to beyond perfection.
I did a lot of choral singing in my day back in the day, and I every time I hear a chorale or a choir or anything like that, or even just like a vocalist in music like that, it just, it hits me in a way that is kind of kind of magical. And so, yes, in as we were kind of working on it, and, you know, spoiler alert, you can look forward because there will be another story coming soon. we're actually seeing the pictures from when they're actually recording the soundtrack and just seeing this, like, you know, the sort of arrangement of the vocalist just sitting there. God, it hit me. It was amazing to look at. I just, I don't know, something kind of magical about it. And, you know, I guess you can sort of see, and what was interesting about the conversation about doing this particular soundtrack is that it kind of, there wasn't like, okay, we're in Silksong mode. It, the game just kind of continued, and Chris Larkin was working on other bits and pieces in and amongst, including like Moonlighter 2 and a bunch of other soundtracks as well. But so having to kind of continue that on for like 7 years and kind of keep it sort of like logically consistent throughout the whole time, it's pretty amazing.
To keep working on the same project for so many years and have to wait until it goes out, because I personally, I'm someone who likes to work in sprints. Is like, cool, I'm gonna work on this for, you know, 3-4 days, smash it out, and it's done. And then
you need to fit procrastination in, that's why.
And sometimes you need that, because sometimes you need to look, and it's the same thing with Clair Obscur and Silksong, that 5 years, 7 years, and so much iteration happens. And you know, those ideas you had at the beginning might develop into something beautiful, but you didn't have the context or the knowledge of the story or of the world that would give you this initial idea that you wrote 5 years ago to realize it where you want it to realize it. And I'm actually, like, with this one, the cheeky part that I find is I had the absolute pleasure of hosting the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra doing a video game concert in August 2025, and musicians from that orchestra sat there and were they tight-lipped, said nothing about being involved with Silksong, and I am just thinking, where is my exclusive access? Why did you not tell me that you were doing this?
Yeah, well, they couldn't say anything. No one knew anything in August, actually. I think it was like basically like first week of September.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, it was out effectively, and that was kind of about it.
Yeah, and Chris Larkin was at that concert, and I was sitting there trying to get that release date out of him.
Yeah, I mean, it's out now, and I guess now they're slowly working on their next expansion, which is coming out very soon. That's supposed to be pretty soon. But again, let's see what happens, because last time they said they were making an expansion, it turned into a whole game, and it was 7 years later. So,
and what I will also mention on that is Timothy Cheel, who is the violist who played on Hollow Knights, also comes to play in Silksong, and he was in attendance in that concert as well. So he was sitting there.
A lot of people go like this, tapping their nose. Yeah, oh, exactly. You know.
And he was sitting next to the children of the violists of the Adelaide Symphony, going like, oh, you know, your dad is playing the part that I played on the game on Hollow Knights. So that was really cool.
Well, let's move on to our next one. Another sequel, in fact. You know, this one was a surprise when it came out as well, and it was the first sequel that this particular studio has ever made. And I would say, for me, one of the games that I have played the most throughout the entire year. It's one that I've kept returning to. It was in early access from, I guess, well, sort of the year beforehand, but it came into its full release this year. And one that I would say, in terms of musical soundtrack, has like two very distinct halves. And two interesting composers who have worked together on this one. Hades 2 by Supergiant. Two different composers on here. First one, Austin Wintory, which you would hear for the Mountain of the Gods, and that finishing it up there was Coral Crown, which I know every word to because I've played that battle so many times.
How many times have you fought the sirens?
Oh, every time. And you know, once you can kind of get it, there are multiple different songs that you can unlock as you go through, and you increase the difficulty as well. And I know the first
and I
time,
love
it builds.
And I love that.
Have you?
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, but as you're working your way up to the final boss battle in that particular area, it actually builds, and the song is kind of layered, so you kind of hear them sort of rehearsing and almost doing the first part of it as you go through. And at first it's sort of like, you know, that sort of thing. And then there's some lyrics kind of come through, and you know that you're getting closer and closer to this final confrontation, and then they just like rock it out.
And then it's also, while you're fighting, if you take out the drummer, the drums actually drop out. If you take out the guitars, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's a great example of awesome implementation.
Yes.
Because you can write the best music in the world for a video game, but if it is poorly implemented, it's the game suffers, I believe. The experience suffers.
Did you know also, Mina,
yes,
that if you go into the settings and you turn the music all the way to zero... then they actually comment on that as well. Like they'll say, hey, guys. So you literally, and then there's like dialogue that's built into the game. So talk about implementation. It's very
There are very few instances where I have turned off the music in a game. It has happened, I know, surprisingly.
Yeah.
But
it's worth a try. It's worth a try for sure.
But Hades 2, what you just heard as well is two parts of a very, very expansive soundtrack. And I think this is one of the hallmarks of the soundtracks in this year and most years, but it's just how much each score packs. Because you heard a bit of the rock song, you heard a bit of the orchestral thing, but there's also the kind of electronic synthesizer thing, the reworkings of the original Hades themes, where you hear, you know, a few of the Mediterranean instruments that rock out, but now you've got more synthesizer elements, the smoke synthesizer that Darren Korb has said speaks to the witchcraft element in Hades 2. And because Gianni doesn't let me have any fun, My original pitch was like, no, listen.
All right, here we go.
I'm going to turn your audience against you now.
Okay.
My original pitch was like, let's showcase as much variety in each soundtrack as possible. And Jenny said, we only have 30 seconds. Like, damn it. But I was like, I wanted to show you that there is a part where you just have the Spanish guitar playing. And that's when you meet Narcissus. And there's another part where you meet Dionysus, and there's a saxophone with bossa nova. There's just so much in this score that they do. And I love the fact that Darren Korb, with Hades 1, collaborated with Austin Wintry on the part that had to do with, you know, coming up to the surface, coming up to
Olympus.
But you just had a slice of that. And that's where you started to hear the orchestral instruments. You started to hear the oboe by Kristen Nagus, who, by the way, also plays multiple instruments in this. And here is like, cool, we are exploring both Hades and Olympus, like Tartarus and the Zenith. It's what are we going to do? So the orchestra really comes into play here. And you and I attended. I hosted Indie Symphony 2 earlier this year, where Austin came down and played some Mountain of the Gods.
Yeah, and that was very, very cool.
And his kind of thing was, I feel like a drug dealer trying to get Darren hooked on the orchestra. And indeed, I think if this isn't your selling point for the orchestra, nothing else will.
Yeah. What I would also recommend for people to go and have a listen to, because every time I hear it, it sends a shiver down my spine, is a piece of music called Moonlight Guide Us. And it's a duet that can occur in the sort of like crossroads area where Artemis, the god Artemis, and Melenoe actually sing together. And you can actually join into the song as Artemis is there. And it's sung by Melenoe's voice actor, Judy Alice Lee, and Ashley Barrett. And it's just beautiful. I'll put a link into the show notes because, yeah, every time I hear it, I just sit and listen, and it really just hits you in a beautiful way. So there are so much like variety in this soundtrack. It's really one of those ones where I think that you are, you know, you kind of have a bit of everything for everyone. And there's so many different pieces, and the way that they're sort of reinterpreted as difficulty changes and the implementation of it in this game, it's really, really clever. It's key. You can tell when a composer is so part, much like with Silksong, right, where a composer is so integrated into the team that's actually making the game, and you can really tell when that makes the difference. And I actually think that's a really nice lead into our next one, which is a composer that we have talked about, and who's actually kind of reunited the team actually from a previous game, and they've kind of come back and done a bit of a spiritual successor in a way to a game that kind of set both of them up in terms of their careers and kind of put them on the map. Austin Wintry special.
Sword of the Sea. And you mentioned a spiritual successor to the game that set him and Matt Nava up, the creative director of Giant Squid, as Journey. But I'd say this is a spiritual successor to everything they've done so far. Because it's got a bit of Abzu, it's got a bit of Journey, it's got a bit of The Pathless, and it's got a bit of Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
I recommend when next time you play any Tony Hawk, turn off the
punk
original
rock.
Tony Hawk music. I know. And put on Sword of the Sea. See how magical it is. And the elements that are at play. Funny thing is, Austin often mentions that the whole, and you and I interviewed both Austin and Matt, as we had a lot of these interviews together this year. I quite enjoyed that. But they mentioned that part of the choir sound came from a joke about Werner Herzog. They were talking to him on some video about skating. It's like, if you were to make a documentary about skating, what would you do? It's like, I would score it with Russian Orthodox choirs to highlight the kind of divinity of what it is you're doing in the movement and that kind of thing. Started off as a joke, and then Austin's like, let's do it. And they had the children's choir, which is the Phoenix Boys Choir, and then Austin layered in some men from the London Voices Choir recorded. Was it recorded at Abbey Road? Could have been. But there's so much going there. And you have Maluka, who's the solo voice. And again, another example of songs coming in, songs with lyrics. And her parts are in a language that's native to the game, that they've that's kind of created for the game, but kind of tells the story, but cryptically to you. And then just the piano, the most ordinary instrument to any household in Austin's words, became kind of at the heart of the score as well. Synthesizers and a Thai music ensemble, a Thai percussion ensemble, kind of really ramping up the pressure, bringing to mind his work with the Thai Cave Rescue TV series. And those collaborators.
Yeah, I forgot he was involved with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Seathen City is the name of that ensemble. So he's, and Kristen Nagus, his frequent collaborator, playing this custom-made Native American drone flute that is in this, looks like a wolf. It's amazing. There's so much happening in here. I'm sorry, you've just like looked at me kind of geeking out.
This is what you can enjoy, and you know, this sort of, I wish you would be unleashed like this on ABC Classic Meter. You're much more controlled and much more.
Well, I
have to save it for this episode.
I have to not make it about me. I have to make it about the music.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, it's definitely one to check out, especially if you played the Journey back on the PlayStation 3 when it first came out. And I think I remember sort of telling people and showing people who are not into games at all that this is kind of what games can be, right? This is something that can be an experience that pretty much anyone can play. And it can sort of be as beautiful as a film, as beautiful as your favorite book, you know, those moments that will keep you thinking about something for such a long time. And sort of the sea, I guess, is sort of that reuniting of the two people who are kind of connected to that first game at a different studio. They're on off doing their own things and done different things in the meantime, but coming back together, which is a really nice sort of reuniting of the creative teams. And so that is Sword of the Sea, one of the picks for the best game soundtracks for 2025. Should we listen to the next one, which is it's quite different, but again, has still got some beautiful some vocals in this one as well. South of Midnight. Very different. Very different to what we've heard so far.
And very imbued with the spirit of the deep American South, both narratively in the game and musically. And would you believe that the composer that brings you this is a man from France? Oh, Olivier de Rivière.
Well, actually, I think if you think about it, the South of the United States has a very strong connection to France, actually. In fact, you know, the Louisiana Purchase, for example, used to be French colony back in the day, and that's where that sort of connection kind of comes from. So there you go. I can sort of see the connection between the two.
It is. No, but that was actually a question that Olivier actually asked when they said, hey, we're going to make this game that explores Southern Gothic fantasy with all these American folklore tales, like, you know, these creatures, Hug and Molly and the Rougarou and Two-Toed Tom. And we want you to write this. It's like, why do you want this French guy to write this deeply American thing? And of course, that's not how it works, because a composer from any kind of background can engage with the elements of a story if they engage with it with heart. And it's one of those things that I approach a lot in my own work, and I talk about a lot, and I'm very passionate about finding ways into a story and finding ways into cultural engagement. And the way that Olivier had done this is he actually worked with multiple musicians from various areas of the deep American South. And it's a combination of improvisation and pre-recording and pre-composition, and just such an extensive collaboration. And again, another soundtrack with songs at the forefront. And here's the thing. We talk about implementation. Olivier de Rivière is obsessed with interactive music. And he is always looking, what more can we do that we're not doing? And he even, the children's choir that you hear in this, they don't just appear in these songs. They appear throughout the world. When you double jump with Hazel, your character, the children actually sing. They're the sound of the double jump, and they sing in whatever the key of the current underscore is happening. So he's accounted for so many possibilities just with that gameplay. So then as you're playing through, you're reaching the next boss, you're hearing little elements of the song that you're about to hear in the big boss fights. And the big boss fight is a whole song like that, and it's just glorious.
Oh, look, you know, I love that sort of thing because, you know, so much of the way that someone's going to experience a game will be different every time someone plays it. And so like we've had with Hades 2 and, you know, some of the other games as well, and South of Midnight, of course, with this one here as well, like actually taking into account player choice and player experience means that each person gets their own way of experiencing the game. That's the beautiful, unique thing, right? We'll all sort of broadly share the same experience, but the way that it kind of goes will be slightly different and uniquely for each person that plays it. So in many ways I've heard it described as that, you know, we are both actor and audience when you're in a video game. And so that kind of is the difference between many of the other different forms of media that you might watch, or, you know, go watch a stage play or any of those sorts of things.
Yeah, so I call video games the intersection of play, cinema, immersive theater, and probably a whole host of other things. But just like, that's the power of video games, just interactivity at such a staggering scale. I think, and this is actually almost the loss when you have a soundtrack album that has been curated as a listening experience, but you lose so much of the possibility that you experience in the game, depending on the game. But these days, the ability of this very living, breathing musical world that you have, trying to translate that into a video game, into a soundtrack album, it's in some cases almost impossible.
It's a different thing almost, really.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like, so look at Silksong, look at any of these soundtracks, so many of those ones are designed to loop at certain moments, and then as you reach a certain threshold or you reach a certain milestone in each particular boss fight, for example, they change again, right? And so that is going to be different for each player. It's going to be slightly different for each, you know, and the way that they can kind of dynamically do that, it's just not going to be the same as if you just, you know, buy the album on vinyl or play it like that. It just has to be a compromise in a different way.
But I'm also very happy that we have these soundtrack albums, because that means that's the one part of a video game that can live on beyond the game experience for me. That's the thing you can put on while you're driving, while you're walking around. You are going to live back in that story, in that world. And if you've never played a video game, that's your point of access. And that's what I love about presenting a radio show on video game music, is that so many listeners are people who don't play games. And I'm like, but you can still experience the magic of this world. And that's why I love doing this episode with you.
All right, well, let's jump into our next one. And this one here, I've got a really interesting question for you, and I'm curious about what your thoughts are after listening to this one. Which is our sixth, we're working our way through them, piece of soundtracks for 2025. Ghost of Yote, which is from Sucker Punch. Mina, that sounded like a Western to me. And I know that samurai's films and Western films often share a lot of DNA but what can you tell me about that? Because that really did sound like I could be walking out with my six shooters instead of my katana, you know?
I'm fairly sure that is quite on purpose. The composer, Toma Otowa, the brief to him was, capture the beauty of feudal Japan, but also we have this Western vibe, because it's basically a big revenge story. And the unique element here is, how do you give it both vibes at the same time. And the shamisen is the key instrument. Your main character, Atsu, carries a shamisen around the same way that Jin Sakai in Ghost of Tsushima, in the predecessor to Ghost of Yotei, carried around a flute, and the flute would actually change the weather. I'm not sure if that's the same mechanic here, but the fact that you have that instrument so prominently on her back the whole time and so prominently in the score, and its narrative and its subversive, it's underscoring this element. The mix here is, you know, kind of Western jangly guitars and shamisen that gives you both vibes. And as you say, yes, it is kind of like a Western, the Westerns being so influenced by samurai films and like Japanese cinema. I do love that it's a two-way conversation. And by the way, just a very side note, Toma Otowa, this composer is also known by another name, and you've likely heard him before in Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, Wataru Hokoyama. So he goes by both names, but most recently Toma Otowa. But, you know, alongside Mark Mothersbaugh in Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, you're hearing the music of this same man.
Have you had a listen to, so interesting with Ghost of Yotei, there is a different soundtrack mode that actually comes into this game. It's called the...
Oh, the lo-fi kind
of... Yeah, Shinichiro Watanabe mode, which is inspired by the anime Samurai Champloo, which is one of my favorites, actually. Have you had a chance to listen to that?
No, I haven't had a chance to listen to that yet.
Yeah.
I was just too engrossed in the original score, but... Was that also by the same composer?
No, I don't know. I don't know if it's by the same composer, but it is. It's designed basically to have that sort of lo-fi hip-hop beats that kind of sound like people were... And that soundtrack was so interesting in that, for the anime at least as well, because it really infused Japanese hip-hop into like a, you know... It was kind of the, I can't remember the exact era of what it was, the Edo period, basically, where, you know, there's this samurai story that's happening. And it was very, it was just a, like a real fusion of culture, which I think is interesting if you think about how, like, we've got this soundtrack for the original part of the game, which is, you know, that sort of Western and Japanese, you know, samurai film aesthetics kind of combined together. What I think is interesting about that one, though, in that it is much more about a vibe. And so... It's probably for people who are going to be playing it through the second time, if they're going to play into a new game plus sort of mode, because it isn't as tightly integrated as the original score is. So the original score obviously follows the story beats and all of those bits and pieces. But
there's absolutely a valid way to do that. It's like you don't have to have the score tightly integrated when you know what's happening.
Yeah.
If you're kind of experiencing it for the first time, you want to get all the narrative punch. The narrative sucker punch, as it were. But
but yeah, definitely one to have a look at. And if you get a chance, listen to the or watch the anime Samurai Champloo as well, because you can see one of the best animes out there from a very long time ago, because I'm an old man and I don't watch new anime anymore. So I only watch stuff from
it's on the watch
20 years ago. So all right, should we go into our next soundtrack? And this one, it's fair to say, Mina, when you first presented me the list, there were 8 different pieces of music in this particular particular soundtrack. You've pulled it down to 2, but I figure there must be a lot of variety and there must have a lot of texture in this particular one, is for the reason why.
Well, there's a very specific reason.
Okay. All right. Well, let's have a listen to this and then you can tell us about all the other bits and pieces we couldn't include.
Fibonacci, a sequence largely summing to preceding numbers, gives us wrath that brings us wonders. Define the recurrence relation.
The Outer Worlds 2 by Obsidian. It's effectively the spiritual successor to the Fallout games. As much as they say that it's not really, it is. by way of, you know, the sort of, you know, almost like Art Deco style post. It's like futuristic sci-fi. There's ridiculous capitalism in it. Yeah. Tell me why you were keen to put 8 different pieces of music in for this soundtrack.
So they weren't actually 8.
Okay.
They were technically 4. The bits in between were just... Okay, okay. Let's pull it back.
I'm ready. So okay, all right, let's go. Here we go.
For satire, in my opinion, in my view, for satire to work, you need... the outright satirical commentary, and you need the earnestness. The score by Oleksa Lazauchak, Antonio Gradanti, and the entire Interleave audio team is where the earnestness comes in. That's your adventure. That's the sound of you venturing to these different planets, exploring these rifts, and navigating all these interpersonal conflicts and relationships and factions. And, you know, when things kick up, it's just going to sound really great. And when things kind of calm down, it's going to ground you into this adventure. And it also does bring back the theme from the original The Outer Worlds by Justin Bell. Justin Bell is currently a sound designer, I believe, with Naughty Dog or under Sony Interactive Entertainment or somewhere in between. But great, great composer. So his theme keeps making a comeback here. And Oleksa Lazauchak and his Interleave team, I think, really do such a great job of just building upon that and taking it to new heights, which I think maybe is emblematic of what The Outer Worlds 2 was doing with the entire Outer Worlds scenario. Now, the other seven tracks, each of them began with a radio presenter, such as you and myself, introducing one of the three radio stations that you can listen to within the game, and each of the three different planets or different places represent what you hear. That Fibonacci song in that second half, that belongs to this mathematician cult that and they have such a great, it's probably my favorite, these very serious songs about mathematics and its relationship to life. There is in that, there is a version of Eric Satie's Gymnopédie, but speaking the digits of pi. 3.14, that, like, you know, and it's just, it's great. And then there's another one, which is Auntie's Choice, which is about really as overtly capitalistic as you get. It's like, we're not going to tell you what to think. We're going to tell you what to buy. And it's got a very, very jazz, very holidays, like kind of, I don't know if it's Dixieland jazz. It's this kind of like, it's a combination of different elements of jazz, but it's always very upbeat. And the third one, which is from the, I can't even remember what, I don't even know what to call it. In one of the places where there's this kind of, this almost Soviet inspired sound, very like in Soviet capital city, you know, we find you, stuff like that, you know, and this is very kind of uproarious,
yeah.
And strident. And so many, what I love about this is like so many vocalists, video game vocalists that I know from different elements are involved in this, in all of these satirical elements. So you have this great score, this great earnest score, and this just outright satirical commentary, the way that you would have had in GTA with the radio stations.
Yes.
GTA radio stations are your outright satire. And then you have the kind of earnest stories in between, and that's the combination. If you can do what GTA does well, I think you're golden.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it sounded very, very good, and lots of different options there to list. And in fact, you know, if you're listening to this and going, "Oh, hang on a second, I want to listen to at least the, you know, the 12,000 other songs that Mina has picked for each of these other pieces of music," we're going to put the full list in for in the show notes, so you can actually see every single track that was picked. We've only been able to play a couple of them here, but we'll have a bit of a bit of a collection for you to work your way through if you're trying to listen to something new. All right, should we go into our next one? One of these games where I think was a strong contender for a game of the year this year, but it was in and amongst a bunch of games that were just bloody awesome. So, you know, I think it will have its own little niche, its own little space in the sort of like the thoughts of people down the track. But yeah, maybe not one that you would have heard of as much as some of the other games that we've heard so far. All right. right, we're heading to the past. We're heading to where is it exactly? It's sort of like
Bohemia, yeah. Bohemia. Like 15th century Bohemia. Mm. Kingdom Come, Deliverance 2. And I'm aware that there are a lot of sequels here.
Outer Worlds 2, Hades 2, yeah. Silk Song.
These are all sequels that I think build really beautifully on the original. And in fact, this is probably the most kind of, I'd say, similar to its predecessor, but not in a, this is not a negative thing, because Kingdom Come Deliverance 1, that soundtrack from 2018, same composers, Adam Sporka and Jan Valta, they had a very similar approach. And I think to turn it up, that soundtrack was already a 10. So this is a 10 and a half, you know, like, and I think in a way where it's just like, I just want more Kingdom Come Deliverance, more and better. There you go. That's what you get. And it's just such a beautifully constructed soundtrack of two halves, really. Like a lot of things, there's a soundtrack of two halves. So maybe that's the other thing about music of 2025. Mm. It's like each score kind of seems to be in multiple shades. Clair Obscur, you know? Like Hollow Knight Silksong, like Hades 2. Like they all kind of have a coin flip to their existence. So here you're hearing this kind of cinematic orchestral choral gorgeousness. That's usually Jan Valta is the composer of that. And then Adam Sporka gives you like the sound of the place, the medieval element of it, with musicians that specialize in that practice, the reproduction of those early sounds. Mm. Very, very authentic.
I'm interested as well in terms of like when you've got these sort of historical games, and so much of what we call sort of like folk music is the music of people playing themselves in the street with like not as much discipline. It's much more passed down through, you know, just cultural practice and all that sort of stuff. Is that something you can kind of notice in the soundtrack of this particular game?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that's that second half of the, you get, the, I don't know, like there are actually a couple of tracks that I think are recording straight from the game where some characters are just singing or playing something and, you know, swearing their heads off. And it's great. It's like, it again, it's like there's earnestness, but then there is moments of levity. And I love moments of levity in a serious story, which I think, again, is very much part of all of these soundtracks and all of these game experiences. But yeah, Kingdom Come Deliverance, it's just, I don't know, like, it's almost like, if you say, hey, Beethoven, give me another great symphony, it's like, cool, here are nine great symphonies. And yes, you might have your favorite, but that doesn't mean one was better than the other.
Yeah.
So I think Jan Valta and Adam Sporka really do that. It's like, here's another great collection of music that is just as good, if not better.
Yeah, building on what you've loved before. And now we'll go on to enjoy this one as well. All right, now let's listen to another soundtrack, and this one is from another Australian-made game. This is one that came out of Early Access and sort of came into Quick. There's an interesting story about this studio in particular. They've had very sort of musical games in the past. Their first studio game was actually very intertwined. The music was a key part of the actual gameplay itself. But let's have a listen to this next one from another Australian game you can pick up.
You can run all you like, there is nowhere to hide, and the road keeps going.
That last little bit of music, sort of, you know, the painting Nighthawks, all those people sitting in the diner. It's quite famous. It's what I kind of imagine is playing in the background. Nice. A bit of rain dropping down as well. That was Malice by Summerfall. Yeah,
Summerfall. And Belinda Coombs, the composer, featuring Montaigne and in that title track and sprinkled throughout the soundtrack. And in that second track, you heard Trumpet by Daniel Jasper Parr, a friend and colleague. Great composer in their own right and multi-instrumentalist and a couple of other bits, but I think Daniel is the most prominent instrumentalist and then Montaigne is the most prominent vocalist. And great because the Montaigne connection comes back to Summerfall's debut game, which was Stray Gods, collaboration with Austin Wintry and Tripod and all the voice actors ever to be in a video game.
or anyone, everyone. Yeah.
It's like it was Dispatch before Dispatch.
Totally.
And such a great, that was a great example. Stray Gods was a great example of implementation and how the soundtrack album experience is such a reduced version of what is possible in the game. Malice feels like a much more focused experience. It is a roguelike, but it's a much more focused experience. And really, such great music to exorcise demons, literally, narratively speaking.
It's interesting. You know, it's one of these games where this studio is, you know, one of the, I guess you look at it and you go, everyone involved in this thing are just like absolute pinnacles of their craft, right? They're all really incredible. You know, Liam Esler, you know, we had
David Gator,
Benjamin E, you know, all these people who've done really excellent stuff on games.
Speaking of Benjamin E,
yeah,
this image right here is from Indie Symphony 1 and was created by Benjamin E.
Yeah.
So this, I have a piece of Ben always right next to me.
Right. Exactly. And so, yeah.
Love you, Ben.
Yeah. And it's one of these games where I think it's, unfortunately, there is a bit of a melancholy to this story as well, because the studio itself, you know, put this game out there and it hasn't quite been the fairy tale ending for them as they would like. You know, it's hard to make creative things. It's really tricky to release games as well. And so, you know, for these particular configuration of people, this might very well be the last sort of game that you see from them. They've kind of put the game out. It's ready to play. You can give it a go. And you can give them some support. But it definitely was not one of those ones that I think sort of set the world on fire in the same way. Or, you know, in a year where we've had so many of these incredible titles that came out, it is really hard for smaller Australian studios to kind of carve out their little space. So if you get the chance and you're able to pick it up, I definitely recommend thinking about grabbing it and giving it a go.
Yeah, and I think also you can grab the music as well on its own. Support the studio, support the composer, support the sound of Australian composers. And there are many more I could have put in. Unfortunately, 2025 had Silksong. You know what I mean? So it's like this Aussie. And then it's like Silksong comes out. It's like, well, everyone in the world is talking about Australia because of Silksong. And I want everyone in the world to talk about Australia because of Malice as well. And Belinda Coombs, on the heels of her music for Ring of Pain, and who's also working on Winnie the Pooh in the Hole, the next
Winnie's Hole.
Winnie's Hole, that's it. The next game. Her specialty is dark music, and dark not in a depressing way, but just kind of dark in this brooding, really cool, moody, interesting way. And I really think she delivers in spades in this score. And I'm can't wait to see what else she's doing. But this is such a great representation of her aesthetic and just her capability. I love it.
Where is Belinda based?
Australia, Melbourne.
Oh, there you go. Nice little connection to it. Well, look, we've come to the end, Mina. We've only got one soundtrack left, and this is, again, as you said, one that's kind of got two halves to it, which is pretty cool.
Set in Australia. I haven't played it yet, so I don't know, but I just know that.
I wouldn't go in there thinking it's an absolute representation. There are some better representations of Australia in some other games that have come out this year. Anyway, the idea of it is that it's set in Australia. You might have been able to guess which game we're talking about. So let's have a listen to the final soundtrack for 2025. Stranding 2 on the Beach by Kojima Productions. It's Hideo Kojima's game. There's nothing like a Kojima game, let me tell you.
Nah, for sure. And I love the fact that his collaboration with composer Ludwig Forssell is ongoing, because they've been working together since Metal Gear Solid 5. And Ludwig Forssell composed the first Death Stranding and then upped the ante for Death Stranding 2. Just, this is such an exemplary score for how to do electronics and acoustics in these really beautiful ways. And you've only heard a sliver of what Ludwig Forssell can do. And that second half, you bring in WoodKids, Yuan Lim Wan, WoodKid, and doing an entire second album for Death Stranding. And another example of implementation, because the way WoodKid described writing these songs, it's like, I'll write this 3 or 4 minute song, and then it'll be stretched out to like a couple of hours through implementation, through all these different layers and the different possibilities and remixes. Such a great representation of the possibilities of video game music. And I first heard WoodKid on a video game trailer.
Oh, like, Assassin's Creed.
Who was this first? I think it was one of those, yeah. And this might have been 2010, 2011. Yeah. And I'm listening to it. I'm like, who is this guy? He's described as a chamber pop musician. If you've heard the music of Grease by the band Berlinist, they're a chamber pop band. This thing of like, we're doing contemporary pop, but with these chambers, like sort of classically inspired sounds and instrumental approaches. And that's what I was hearing with WoodKid. He's like, these are the things I hear in some of my favorite game soundtracks, but with a pop song, what is going on? And it really opened my ears and eyes to this whole world he was helming. And, you know, other composers and musicians like him. Also, little known fact, WoodKid is also a director, a video director, and he directed Teenage Dream by Katy Perry.
There you go.
That was such a weird kind of thing to find. It's like, I've never known you as that person, yeah. But there you go.
There you go. I mean, some people are very good at lots of different things, aren't they?
Yeah, WoodKid is kind of staggering. He's one of those people who makes me want to quit.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, if you exist in the world, what use? I know that's not how we do this, but
you've got to be like, all right, I've got to add an extra string to my bow, you know? That's it. What else could I learn how to do?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
That track you would have heard is Iron, from which was on the Assassin's Creed Revelations trailer. From way back in
2011,
actually. Yeah, 2011. So that's where I first heard WoodKid. But again, it had that sort of like almost like trip hop vibes, which was like sort of that era. And it was awesome to hear that. So yeah, Death Stranding 2 is a game that is nominally set in Australia. There are bits and pieces that are there. it's very much Kojima's idea of certain things. And Kojima has a very good eye for aesthetic, has a very good eye for vibes, but sometimes those vibes are not exactly lining up with what the real world is. And so, yeah, that's what I would say. If you're going into it expecting it's going to be a game that is very Australian looking, yes, there are definitely Australians in it. There are people who are actually in the cast and playing characters, for example, that you would know. There are bits you can get like a quokka in it at some point, which is pretty cool. Which is like,
okay, hold on. How do you have a game with a quokka and it's not the game of the year? Come on.
Yeah, well,
it was robbed.
Yeah, exactly.
The quokkas will revolt.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I know. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting game. And I think if you look at someone who is so creative and so interesting and thinks about every aspect of the craft and that they're making, like, you're just not going to find anyone other than Kojima. Sometimes these games, you know, may not be for everyone, but I think it's definitely worth having a bit of an experience, and maybe the way in is through the soundtrack. So thank you, Mina, for picking that one. That's it. We've got to the end. We've done our 10 soundtracks, and now how many more have you got for honorable mentions? Another 400.
Maybe around 10 more.
I'm going to list every soundtrack of every game that's come out this year.
No, but that's the problem, is 2025 was such a massive year for video game soundtracks. And what I tried to do with this top 10 is say, you know what? What are you doing that's kind of unique and musically operates on an interesting level? Because so many scores are doing such a great job at what they do. But, you know, when you have this thing of like, this is a song, or this is a thing where the songs are part of the battle, or like, and or you just have 8 hours of all the music in the world. There's already so much happening there, but I wanted to make sure that I didn't want to skip over some of my honorable mentions here. And as I mentioned, there were a lot of Australian games that had some great soundtracks. The Drifter and Tempopo are two from out of this country. Such a great combination, and Tempopo winner of the AGDA's Best Music. The Drifter was right up there. I may have been one of the judges, and it was a tight race for me. So both of those soundtracks, so great. Soundtracks that take you to history are Assassin's Creed Shadows, another great soundtrack by The Flight. No matter what you think of Assassin's Creed or Ubisoft, they never miss with the music, and The Flight do not miss with this mix of Japanese traditional music and hip-hop and a bit of Wu-Tang Clan influence. All that kind of stuff is in there, and it's a very different thing to Ghost of Yote. I know they got compared a lot, but it's a very different experience. Although it does have a bit of that kind of Western vibe, a little bit. Civilization 7, like, you know, 9 years since Civilization 6, and Christopher Tin, Jeff Knorr, and Roland Rizzo delivering some great themes and sounds of across history with collaborators from around the world. Just every Civilization soundtrack for me is very special. Mario Kart World, I think, I know Donkey Kong Bonanza was great. I think musically, Mario Kart World is just everything. Like, it's like, it's in keeping with the legacy of Mario Kart. You had great soundtracks, Mario Kart 8, and really upped the ante for Mario Kart World. Monster Hunter Worlds, Monster Hunter Wilds, another just great follow-up. Like, just keeps upping the ante. A couple of really great instrumental acoustic soundtracks. The Nightling by Tumult Collective. Listen to that, the acoustic instruments and performances, and very intimate and gorgeous, and such, just so filled with joy. Similar thing with The Midnight Walk, Joel Bula. Such a great, I love hearing really great acoustic performances, especially when these, like, these little chamber kind of ensembles. And another, finally, the electronic, just another great electronic representation, The Altars, Piotr Mieszkow. Such a great soundtrack, another collaboration with 11-Bit Studios. And I will end with the fact that one of the first game soundtracks I worked on was with Piotr, with this composer, Piotr Mieszkow, with 11-Bit Studios in their very early days. It was a little mobile game called Funky Smugglers. And we did this kind of 70s hip-hop soul thing. I provided some words and vocals, and he was writing these really great funky things and with his electric guitarist. So it's always, like, since working with him back in 2012 on that, and seeing 11-Bit Studios and Piotr with this very fruitful collaboration that, you know, extended through the Frostpunk and This War of Mine and all the kind of stuff. And really, The Altar is this entire gorgeous work of his hands, and I'm very happy it exists in the world.
11-Bit Studios is one of those ones where I think they just put out lots of really great games. They just have a pretty strong strike rate with their stuff, you know. They've just got some really, really good stuff. Mina, that's pretty much it. All the time we've got now for this episode until next year, which will be the fifth time that we've done this. So this is the fourth time. people can listen to you on ABC Classic, but if you're in Australia, where can they, what time would they be able to listen if they want to listen live?
From the 23rd of January, 2026, the show will be airing Fridays at 11 p.m. That's live, but you can always listen online for a month afterwards for each episode.
And as I've said in previous episodes, really good to, like, just listen to ABC Classic and, like, mow the lawn. I don't know why. I just love love listening to game show. It feels like I'm completing an epic task, you know. This is a big boss battle that I'm getting the lawn that I'm trying to keep under control.
I'm also on Instagram, on Twitter for some reason, on Blue Sky, and on YouTube.
Give everyone a follow if you're there.
Woohoo! Right. Thank you, Gianni.
No worries. Thank you again, my friend.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
This has been Lightmap, Sifter's interview podcast. Please support the show by giving us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast player, or head to our socials to show your support as well. If you like something that we've done, like literally sharing it with someone else who you think will enjoy it, is like really incredible. Like, it's such a simple thing to do, but it actually does make a big difference for more people to find the stuff that we work on. We do this because we really love it. We love doing the exploring the creativity of video games and talking to interesting people who think about this medium really deeply. And it's something that we do. To be a games journalist in 2025 is it's not a job that pays the bills, basically, but it is something that we think is important, especially for an Australian context. We really want to make sure that Australian games in particular are really being documented and being recorded. So if you can share the support, to show your support for our shows, we've got a few that are kicking around. We've got a website as well, sifter.com.au. It makes all the difference. Now, Sifter is produced by myself, Kat Jahn, Naomi Jackson, Kyle Paletto, Chris Button, and Adam Christou. Mitch Lowe is senior producer. We've also got Fiona Bartholomaeus as well in the mix, who I didn't include in this list. So sorry, Fiona. My name is Gianni DiGiovanni. I'm Sifter's executive producer. Thanks to Audio Technica in Australia and Apple for their support of Sifter. And thank you to Mina Shamali for composing the Lightmap theme tune for which starts in 2025, our 10th anniversary. We appreciate you. We'll catch you all on the next episode of Lightmap in 2026. Until then, have fun.